Okay. So I think last time I said I wanted to mention just something in terms of there's a story in the Gemara in Bava Metzia at the end of Perek Hazav around the Nuntes area. So there's a famous incident you probably heard of called the Tanur Shel Achnoi. Have you ever heard of that story?
Yeah.
Right. It's one of those cool stories that involves all kinds of parlor tricks and whatnot. So the story goes that there was a machlokes concerning a certain type of oven, whether it was makabel tumah or whether it wasn't a makabel tumah. It was machlokes between everyone and Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. So Rabbi Eliezer, just to refresh your memory, was the great Bucky. He was the great expert in terms of never forgetting any of his learning. Right, the Mishnah in the second parak of Pirkei Avos says that he was a bor sid she'eno ma'abed tipa. He was like a water cistern. I don't know what a cistern is, but I assume it's some place that water is stored, and it doesn't lose a drop. And in terms of Bikias, if you could have put the whole world on one side of the scale and Reb Lezer ben Hyrcanus on the other side of the scale, he would have outweighed the entire world. His Bikias was equal to the entire world's Bikias, which is, you know, pretty good. And he had a machlokes with the rest of the whole Beis Medrash as to whether or not the Tanur Shel Achnoi was Makabel Tumah. And he basically got frustrated after a while. He tried to bring Raya's and nobody was Makabel his Raya's. So then he finally just said, okay, enough is enough. There's a tree outside. There's a carob tree outside. Let the carob tree prove that I'm right. And the tree uprooted itself and it ran down the street and, you know, took root somewhere else. So they all were very unimpressed. And they said, you can't bring a raya from a tree. And then he said, okay, so let the water outside prove that I'm right. And the water, instead of flowing downstream, started flowing upstream. So they said, you can't bring a raya from a river either. Now, obviously, there's more to this story than on the surface. If you look in the Mefarshim on the Agadita, they tell you what everything represented, what the tree represents, what the river represents, and why he thought it would be a good raya, and they thought it wasn't a good raya. So finally, he just said, okay, the walls of the Beis Medrash will prove that I'm right. And the walls of the Beis Medrash started caving in. And Rabbi Yehoshua got a little offended by this. And he screamed at the walls and he said, what are you getting involved? This is Talmidei Chachamim arguing and learning. What are you getting involved for? None of your business. So finally the walls stopped caving in, and the Gemara says that they refused to go back to their original state out of respect to Rabbi Eliezer, but they refused to cave in more out of respect to Rabbi Yehoshua. So they just stayed slanted. And then finally, Rabbi Eliezer was getting a little frustrated, so he said, okay, enough, you know, Baruch Shalom, tell them I'm right. So they said, so the Baskol comes out and says, Ma atem im Rabbi Eliezer, shalacha kemoso b'chol makam. What are you bothering to argue on Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Eliezer, the halacha is always like him, which ironically it's not. We very, very rarely passing like Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Yehoshua was extremely unimpressed with this as well, and he screams back to the Baskol, anybody know the three words that he used? Lo b'shamayim he. It's none of your business. You gave up your right to paskin shailas when you gave the Torah, and the Torah is lo b'shamayim, and that's it. We don't paskin like a baskol. So that was the end of the whole fight, and basically they decided afterwards that since Rabbi Eliezer refused to give in, that they were going to excommunicate him. It's machlokas in the Rishonim exactly what the nature of the excommunication was. The Pashup Shad is they put in what's called Nidui. Nidui is a non-Cherem excommunication. Right? It's what we would call today Cherem. We use the term Cherem. There is a real term Cherem, which the Gemara Moed Katan describes the difference between Nidui and Cherem. Cherem is actually a curse that a person should die. That's what it really means. That's why, by the way, like if you ever put a book in Cherem, like you know that the book is not actually in Cherem. It's just publisher wasn't selling so well, so he just decided to, you know, put his own book in Cherem, usually just so people would then want to buy it. If you ever try getting copies of certain books that are in Cherem, they're very expensive. Anyway, so you can't put a book in Cherem. A book, first of all, the raya that you can't put a book in Cherem is the Gemara Moed Katan says that Cherem is it's osios ramach. It's made out of Resh Mem Ches, which is the Talmudic assumption for how many limbs a person has in his body. And it's supposed to be a curse that's nichnas into the Ramach Evarim that the person should die. So you can't really, I assume most books don't have 248 limbs, right? So that's a raya that you can't put a book in Cherem. Anyway, but when we say Cherem, we mean Nidui. Nidui means some type of excommunication. It doesn't mean the person should die. The reason you're not allowed to talk to someone in Cherem is that, you know, if you start talking to dead people, so people start looking at you funny. So you're supposed to act as if the person is dead, and therefore, like, you don't give them any kibudim, you don't do business with them, you don't talk to them. Nidui just is actual excommunication. So Pashtus is that's what they did to Rabbi Eliezer, and they excommunicated him. It's a question as to what he did that was so horrible that he needed to be excommunicated. But okay, Pashtus Pshad, he would never give in. Like there's a din Yachid v'Rabim Halacha k'Rabim, and he constantly argued on the Rabim. So they didn't know what to do. They were afraid that if they broke the news to him in a harsh way, that he would get really upset, and then the world would be destroyed. So they basically tried to break it to him as easily as possible, so they took his finest student, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva went to break the news to him, and he dressed up in black clothing, and like he was in Avelis, and he knocks on the door, and Rabbi Eliezer answers the door, and he sees Rabbi Akiva dressed up like an Avel. He says, Mahayom miyomim, what's so different today? You know, why is today different from every other day? And Rabbi Akiva says, It appears that the Rabbanan are going to separate themselves from you. So when Rabbi Eliezer heard that, he himself tore his clothing, and he observed Avelis as well, and he cried. The Gemara says he cried three tears, and because of those three tears, the world was shaken up in three different ways. Whatever, whole Maisa. And at the end, then it's the Gemara continues and says that his wife was the sister of the Nasi, Rabban Gamliel, and Rabban Gamliel was in charge of all the local, you know, niduis and cherims and all things like that. He was the Av Beis, and he was the Nasi of Klal Yisrael. So Rabban Gamliel says that he was on a boat when the cherim went into effect, and there was a huge storm that was trying to topple his ship over, and he screamed out, Ribbono Shalom, you know that I didn't do this for my own kavod, I only did it for kavod Shemayim, that there shouldn't be marba machlokis be Yisrael. And the winds calmed down and the seas stopped. So anyway, Rabban Gamliel's sister was Rabbi Eliezer's wife. And every single day during davening, Rabban Eliezer didn't go to daven with a minyan anymore. He davened b'chidus. And every single day she was makbid to always be mafsik him in between Shmona Esrei and Tachanun, so that he would always interrupt between the two tefillos. And one day, there's two opinions in the Gemara. Some say she thought it was Rosh Chodesh when it really was a chaser month. It was really a chaser month, or that there was an ani that came to the door at that exact time, and she was feeding him some bread, and she missed it. She missed the timing of interrupting her husband, and then when she came in, she already was too late, and she started nudging him. She said, "What are you doing? You want my brother to die?" And then the word came out that the Nasi Rabban Gamliel had just died. Apparently, the Rishonim learned from there, specifically the Ritva quotes from his Rebbe, the Ra'ah, on that Gemara, that we see from here that you're not supposed to be mafsik between Shmona Esrei and Tachanun, especially if you want to kill your brother-in-law. So the point is that apparently your tefillah is not as effective. It's not that, I don't think it means that the Rabbi Eliezer was davening that Rabban Gamliel should die. I just think that he was always in tremendous pain, and his tefillos reflected the pain that he was in for not being able to teach Torah, not being able to be with, you know, with all of his colleagues and with, you know, the other Tanaim. And basically the pain of Onah, the pain that he felt from the affliction that had been caused to him by the Nasi, by the one who put him in this Nidui, the wrath of that pain wasn't fully taken out on Rabban Gamliel Kol Zman that he was mafsik in between Shmon Esrei and Tachanun. So apparently, if one says Tachanun right after Shmon Esrei, then their tefillos are far more effective than if they don't, and if they're mafsik in between. And that's where the halacha that we mentioned came from, that one should not be mafsik really from the beginning of Psukei Dezimra through the end of Tachanun. Yeah.
I have a question about the story itself.
I don't know if I know the answer, but.
I understand that, like, the whole line of, like, Lo Bishmaimi, but isn't that just when there's, like, the Machloka and we don't know the answer? Like, when we do know the answer and, like, God's given us the answer, then it is Bishmaimi.
No, it's worse. And it's funny. The Gemara, I left out one line. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim saw Eliyahu HaNavi, and he said to Eliyahu HaNavi, by the way, during that whole Maisa with Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, what was God doing? And he said that God was laughing. He was smiling, and he said, Nitzchuni b'ni Nitzchuni. You've defeated me, my sons. You've defeated me. Meaning, he was proud of us that we didn't give in. Like, it's pretty impressive to give in to all these miracles and vaskols, and he was very proud that we understood what Torah was versus what we were trying to be wooed into thinking that halacha lemaisa as well. If the Rambam writes that if a navi comes, let's say it's the best navi, Eliyahu HaNavi, comes and he says, I had a prophecy last night that there's a big discussion about the following halacha, and Kodesh Baruch Hu told me the halacha is like this guy, not the other guy. Then he's officially a Navi Sheker, and he's Chayav Misa. If a Navi comes and tells you that he had a prophecy as to what the halacha is in a particular circumstance, or even what the pshat in a pasuk is, really, in terms of any Torah-related item, so if you get that via prophecy, that's considered false prophecy. Hashem would never tell you a halacha via prophecy, or really any goof of Torah via prophecy. That's not what Torah is for. Torah is for us to bring the Chachmas Hashem down to this world. It's not for it to be delivered from the upper worlds to here. That was done once at Matan Torah, and from then on in, it's our job to properly darshan the Torah, properly understand the way the Torah is supposed to be learned. There are a lot of examples of this, but no, there is right and wrong, meaning there's a concept called shivim panim la-Torah, but there is a wrong way to do things, meaning if you're not using the proper methodology to get to your means, there's something called, for example, what's the lashon of the megala panim b'Torah shelo kahalacha? A person who purposely learns the Torah incorrectly, meaning they can convince people that they're right, or even if they can't convince everybody that they're right, but they can convince some people that they're right, and they dafka learn the Torah incorrectly, then that's one of the things that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says. You know, they have a whole list of things of malbim pnei chaver barabim, mefer briso shel Avraham Avinu. What else is on that list? Anybody remember? Mavazes Amoados. There's two more things that I'm missing. But it says, one of them is Megala Panim b'Torah Shelo Kahalacha. That person who dafka learns wrong pshat, not using the proper methodology, not saying a way that they think is emes, that's a person who has no chelik in Olam Haba. Because they took the most sacred of activities and basically reduced it to their own mind game, which is not acceptable. And that's, if you look in the Sifsei Chaim on something about Machias HaMalek, in the category, he has, on the Moedim, so he has on around Purim time, there's the Sifsei Chaim where he goes through the Yisod of HaMalek is Bizui Kedusha, and he goes through the five things that are listed in that Mishnah, and he explains how each one of those things is an example of somebody who doesn't understand Klal Yisrael's concept of infusing Kedusha into this world, of taking Kedusha and infusing it into the mundane. And the Chassidish Pshat in Amalek is, it's a combination of two words, Am and Malak, right? You know what Malika is? No? Yeah, it's a little gross. You basically, when they shechted birds for Karbanos, they used to cut the throat of the bird with a coin, had a long thumbnail. And they wouldn't use a shlita knife on the birds. So they shechted the bird with they would just twist their thumb like that, and that would cut the head off the bird that was being brought on the Mizbeach. And the concept of Malika is separating the head from the body. So Amalek's whole yisod was that they held, of course there's a Ribbono Shel Olam, but he's up there. It has nothing to do with us. It's, we're down here, we're physical. And it's the same yisod with Baal Peor, with all these things. What was like Baal Peor, if you think about what it was so ridiculous. Like, why does anyone think that this is a worship of, you know, of some type of a god? But it really was. It was the same thing. Like, we just had the Olympics. Saying that was the yisod of the Olympics, the spiritualization of the physical in terms of recognizing the physical as a means in and of itself and something which you can't possibly do any better than this. Right? And the Hellenists made a religion out of that. They made a whole Avodah Zarah out of this yisod that eating in of itself is a religious activity, you know, competing physically is a religious activity, all these ideas, because there's nothing else worth striving for. God is up there doing his thing. We're down here doing our thing. And that's all based on that idea of these things. Like, use the example, Mvazas HaMoedos, the holy yisod of the Moed is who infuses the Kedusha into the time. We do, right? The Shabbos is Mekadesh HaShabbos. Moed is Mekadesh Yisrael V'Azmanim, right? Through Yisrael, the Zmanim are Mekudesh, right? As opposed to, or same thing, even Megalop, Mefer Briso Shalom Ravina is also taking a body part which is not necessarily, you know, associated with Kedusha and putting the Simen of the Bona Shalom on it. You have the Malbin Pnei Chavir Barabim refusing to recognize the Tzelem Elokim in another human being, saying that, well, he's a person, who cares what it is, feelings, bad feelings, not bad feelings, it doesn't mean anything to me. But if you recognize a person as Tzelem Elokim, you'd see the Kedusha, you wouldn't do that. Right? Same thing. So the same thing as Megala Panim Batorah Shalom Kalacha. Say, what's Torah? It's two guys arguing about it. You know, an egg that was born on Erev Yontif versus on Yontif. Are you allowed to use it? Are you not allowed? Who cares? What is an egg? You know, that's not godly. That's not, you know, that's not something worth really celebrating and worshiping, etc. But really, we understand that the Torah, the yisod of the Torah is that it doesn't, whatever came from on high came, and it's our job now to be Megala Panim BaTorah in the right way. That's the job of humanity. And that's, you know, that's really the Ikar Avoda of humanity, as opposed to saying that it's all coming from on high, or whatever came, and, you know, that's it. So that's the Yisod of Megala Panim BaTorah Shel Kalacha. For example, there's a very famous Rashi in Ksuvos where he discusses the concept of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And he basically says, if you have two people arguing over what their Rebbe said, one guy said he said black, and one guy said he said white, so one of them is right and one of them is wrong. We don't say Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim on that machlokas. It's a metzius question. One, he either said it one way or he said it the other way. So therefore, we don't say Elu. When we have two opposing views and explanations as to what something is, then we can say Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. But there are times that one is right and one is wrong. I don't know if that helped. But did that answer your question at all, or... Not really. Maybe. I don't know. You could ask me again later. I don't know. Maybe I didn't understand what you were asking. Okay. So that's the whole maysa with Tachanun. That's why Tachanun is important in terms of you know, having it come after the Shemona Esrei without a hefsek. What about the days where there's no Tachanun? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but. Definitely don't look to get out of Tachanun more frequently than you need to. Apparently, tefillos are less effective on the days that you don't say Tachanun. I remember there was one time when I was in YU. There was one Tu B'Shvat. So we had, the way it worked was we had morning seder, then we had lunch, and then we had shir. So I went to lunch and I sat down with a friend of mine. A few people were there, and the guy said, "Any idea why you don't say Tachanun today?" So I said, "What are you talking about? It's a yontif. It's Tu B'Shvat. It's Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. It's a big deal." And he's like, "Oh, whatever you say, you know." So he got to shir. So Shefter says the first thing he goes, "Anybody know why we don't say Tachanun today?" So he basically explained that, like, Tachanun is not really a chova. It's really v'ikaron. It's a rishus. And if you don't say it, you don't reap the benefits. If you do say it, you do reap the benefits. So sometimes we cancel it, you know, for, you know, different. Some reasons more valid than others, and, you know, I don't, different. You know, there's some poskim who are very into canceling tachanun, and some are not so into canceling tachanun. Depends who you ask. Anyway, okay, so let's move on. Let's move on into the tefillah of Hodu, into the beginning of Psukei Dezimra. Just in terms of the background of where it comes from. So I'm sure you're familiar with the story of the Aron. In times of Shmuel Navi, the Aron was captured by the Plishtim, and then the Plishtim basically got into a whole lot of trouble for having the Aron. and they got sick, and they had to give it back. So they gave it back, but it basically got left where it had been for some time. And the Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, so there was nowhere really for the Aron to be brought back, brought to, right? Shaul HaMelech had neglected bringing back the Aron, and that was not so good. And David HaMelech decided first he was going to bring the Aron back to his city of Ir David. The problem is that they had this, they had it up on a wagon, you know the whole mice over there? They had it up on a wagon, and they were bringing it back in this whole parade, and then the Aron looked like it was going to fall off, and Uzzah tried to catch the Aron, and he was killed trying to save the Aron. And David HaMelech was very afraid at that point. He was a little bit upset, and he was afraid that to have the Aron too close to him, he thought it might be a little bit dangerous. So he left it in the barn of a man named Oved Edom. But when he got word that Oved Edom was being blessed by the presence of the Aron on his property, he realized that if you treat the Aron with the proper Kedusha, then nothing bad is going to happen to you, and just the opposite, something good will happen to you. And therefore, after 3 months, he was ready to bring it to Ir David. So if you look in source number 3, you have the psukim there that he was bringing the Aron into Ir David, and basically they had this whole parade, and they were shechting karbonos every few feet, and David decided, you know, David was very excited, and he was, this was the whole maisa between him and Michal Bashol, that she didn't approve of the way he was rejoicing. But besides that, if you look going into Pasuk Zion, it's in Divrei Hayamim Perek Tes Zion, Pasuk Zion, it says, Bayomahu oz nasan David barosh lahodos lashem biyad asaf ve'echav. Right, so who's Asaf? Well, he's pretty famous from Tehillim, mostly, right? He was one of the authors of Tehillim. And he was also somebody who was around at this point. David basically had him write down this idea of, actually, if you look in Pasuk Hey, it'll tell you. Right, so it says that, starting from Pasuk Dav, Yitin lefnei Aron Hashem min halavim mesharsim lahazkir lahodos lahal Hashem elokei Yisrael. So David had Levium surrounding the Aron. And who was it? Asaf, Harosh, Mishnei, Zechariah, and it lists off names of the Nevi'im who were there. So the head, Levi, was Asaf. And he was, you know, he was singing all of these songs. And David gave him this particular song to sing. What was the song? So starting in Pasuk, Ches says, Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo, Odiyo Ba'amim Alil Asaf, Shiru Lo Zamru Lo, etc., etc. I only gave you through Pasuk Yid Aleph, but you pretty much get the gist of it, that this is what we call Hodu. Right, so this is the time that Hodu was written, when the Aron was being returned to Ir David after spending 3 months in the barn, and after being captured from Mishkan Shiloh and being left to do nothing for some time after it had been returned by the Plishtim. So David HaMelech wrote this tefillah. Okay, just in terms of continuing in the background of the tefillah, just in terms of the Iker Tachlis of this section of Pesukei Dezimra, Sarav Pinkus has a very interesting thing. I took it out of its context, so it's a little choppy, but because he has this whole mahalach in terms of building things that I didn't want to get into. But he says that Bishlav Hasheni, the second level of our morning prayers is Ashiros Vasishbachos, Anu oskim b'silu kakochos ha'ma'akvim osano me'avodas Hashem u'ma'akvim esagilui ha'yichud ha'amiti ba'osam shnei ha'olamos. So, saying in the second section of our tefilos, he wants to explain that we're really holding by the olam ha'malachim at that point, and our goal in Pesukei Dezimra is to banish any forces that are trying to hold us back from revealing Hashem's true oneness in our world and in the upper world, the Olam HaMalachim. HaChelek Shebetfila HaMeyuchad L'Sug Yizu Tfilas Hodu. And the main tfila for this is Hodu. Rov HaPsukim Kan Oskim B'Sug Yizu. Most of the psukim discuss bringing out the oneness of Hashem into the world. And he gives a lot of examples in the book. If you read the Sefer, he has a lot more examples. I just gave you the first one. Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo Hodiyo Ba'amim Alil Asav. It's all about talking about God's greatness, talking about God's oneness. L'chu v'hodiyu ba'amim sheyeshno borei olam. Go tell everyone that there is a creator. Go tell everyone that there is a Ribono Shel Olam. Pirsum Maisa Hashem Zoi Sugya Gedola V'Yisodit Ma'od B'chol Ma'areches Hazos. To publicize the acts of God is a tremendous part of this entire program. Hakol Oseik B'Ma'arecha Zo Shel Siluk V'Kilui Kochos Hara. And this is all focused on removing and destroying any evil forces. Ad asher yofia aleinu Hashem Yisbarach b'chol shifas oro. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu can finally reveal himself with all of his light. So the Zemar of Hodu is really about bringing Hashem's existence, power, and his actions into this world by informing the people of everything that Hashem does and has done in the past. This is a major tool in eradicating the kochos of evil in the world. Now, what does that mean? So Seraph Pincus quotes this Chovos HaLevavos here, which is a very important yesod that we have to understand, and it's something which helps us, you know, overall in terms of our Avodas Hashem, and specifically in terms of understanding Hodu. So if you take a look at source number 5, it says, Ben Adam, he's talking to you as a first person. Ro'i l'cha l'das. You have to know something. Ki asone ha'gadol sheyesh l'cha ba'olam hu'yitzarcha ha'nismach b'kochos nafshecha v'ha'me'urav b'mezeg ruchacha v'ha'mishtatev imcha b'anhagos chushecha gufniyim v'aruchniyim. Your greatest enemy is your partner in everything. V'ata yoshein v'hu er l'cha. So right, you, while you sleep, he's still awake. You forget about him, he doesn't forget about you. Big day ha'yididus va'ada eidei ha'ava l'cha. So he says, and he dresses himself up in friendly clothing, he acts like he loves you. V'nichnas b'chlal ne'monecha v'anshi atzascha v'skulas ahavecha. And he gets into your inner circle of all your closest advisors. And he teaches you, he gives you advice with his killer arrows that kill you from your roots in the living world. Among the strongest of the things that he will send in your direction, asher yore oscha v'yilachim oscha b'hem b'matzvon einecha. He's going to try to hide your eyes. He's going to try to get you to close your eyes. She yishtadel l'safek alav amitasecha u'lishabesh mashen esbara l'cha u'la'arbev es nafshecha b'machshavos k'zavim v'tainos shkarim. He's going to try to take that which you know is true and make it a little bit questionable and to confuse you with false thoughts and lying claims. Yatrid oscha bohem mitoalosecha v'yisafik alecha mashin esbar lecha me'emunasecha v'dasecha. And he's going to try to bother you from accomplishing your goals, your purposes, and he's going to try to make you doubt that which you have true belief and religious zeal in observing. So what's he saying? He's saying that your Yetzer Hara, for starters, dresses himself up as your best friend, as your whatever, you know, that may be, gives you, you know, sort of works his way into one's inner circle and tries to make a person doubt that which the fundamentals of one's faith would seem to make very, very clear. What is he basically saying? He's saying that the Yetzer Hara has this Pesach, has this opening that it enters through and tells us that what you think is exactly true is not exactly true. There's room to argue, there's room to debate. It's not so clear-cut, right? And it starts with that, and it starts with these little openings, it starts with these little ideas, and it at once that thought gets into a person's head, it starts growing and growing. A person has this gnawing sense of doubt, this gnawing sense of questioning, to the extent that eventually it leads to full-fledged, you know, doubts, full-fledged questions. And most of us, when we have questions, and we don't necessarily have answers to those questions, so I think most of us end up in a situation of moderation. We end up in a situation of being on the fence. Most of us, everybody has questions. Everyone has doubts. Everyone has tainas. But at the end of the day, there are very few people who actually act on them. There are very few people who say, like, well, until I find the answer to my question, I'm not going to daven another word. I'm not going to, you know, do another mitzvah. I'm going to be violating every avir in the book. I don't think most people do that. I think most people, what they do is, if they have doubts, if they have sveikos in their life, they just end up being very, very mediocre. They just like, I'm not going to invest so much of my efforts. I'm not going to invest so much of my kochos into an avoda, which, you know, I'm not 100% comfortable with to begin with. So therefore, I'm just sort of going to sort of lay back and let it happen to me. I'm not going to move out of my frum neighborhood. I'm not going to, you know, just completely go off the derech, but I'll just let things be. I'll sort of, you know, let things happen to me instead of make things happen. I think that's the problem a lot of people have. Now, again, that's not the only reason people go that path, but it's one of them. That's the basic idea that the Chovas HaLevavos is going for. That a person's Yetzirah, you have to remember, the person's Yetzirah before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, what was the Iker Yetzirah? What was the main Yetzirah that people had? Avodah Zarah, right? So the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah existed very strongly. Why? Because there were no atheists, there were no kofrim in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, because there was prophecy. There were open miracles. So what were you going to say? Like, nah, it was just a coincidence. Like, Ad Kedei Kach, no one was willing to go. What were they willing to do? What was the Yetzirah driving them towards? Not the Nevi'ei Sheker. Yeah, there's God, but there's also other gods, and we're going to worship some of those other gods as intermediaries or as completely different religions. That was the Iker Yetzirah. The Yetzirah to deny it all didn't exist, because it would have been stupid. It would have been a foolish endeavor to try to deny the existence of God in a world of nisim gluim. It's impossible, right? But after, the Gemara tells us that after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, in the beginning of the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah were mispalo, because people were failing against the Yetzer Hara Avodah Zarah. So what did they daven for? They davened for the Yetzer Hara Avodah Zarah to be eradicated, right? But what was the byproduct of that? What? Lashon Hara? Well, more specifically, there was the Yetzer Hara. Once the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was eradicated, we also lost prophecy. Everything that exists in the world exists at an equilibrium. The equilibrium for the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was Nevuah, meaning that the world of open communication with the Ribbono Shel Olam was shut down at that point. Those were the two sides of it. Right, the same way that they were then mispalo that the Yetzer Hara for Gili Arayis should be destroyed, but they also destroyed procreation. So they realized that was impossible. The world couldn't go on like that. They said chickens weren't laying eggs. There was nothing, like, flowers weren't pollinating. So, yeah?
I thought they would be called Hara today because we don't have the Kamehameha Zero Rosara anymore, so now
we speak Lashon Hara.
Why would they think that
they Okay. I don't know. I don't think that's what the Gemara says over there. The Gemara says basically that there was a two-pronged system. If you lose the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, you lose prophecy. Meaning, when you're moving from an open society into a closed society, not in the classic sense. I'm saying, like, you're moving from a society of open communication with God, but the flip side of that is Avodah Zarah. The flip side of that is no one's going to deny the existence of a God who communicates with his people openly. But they will say, well, there are other prophets also who are false prophets, and they, you know, they're the real deal. And most, if you look at most Avodah Zarahs, even predating, you know, predating any type of, I'm not talking about like modern Avodah Zarahs like Hinduism and that sort of thing. I'm talking about like old time, good old fashioned Avodah Zarahs. You know, they all believed in God also. Not all, but most of them believed in some form of a chief God who was the real God, and everyone else sort of like was just some superpowered intermediary. Right? So, and that's how the Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah that the whole thing was going on. But there wasn't a point in denying the existence of God in that type of a society. But once that door was closed, then that the other door was open to, you know, the door to complete kfira, the door to atheism, the door to, you know, not having any open communication with God and not seeing God on a regular basis. That's what got let out. Yeah. I mean, like superpowered. Not for us. They, whatever they do, they do. I don't know. I'm saying like, but they're none of our business. The point is, we don't daven to them. We don't. We're not messiahes to them. We don't have anything to do with them. Right, but that's none of your business, really. Like, I mean, the only time it's your business is to say tefillos in Aramaic. You're not supposed to say the Aramaic tefillos if you're davening biyachidus. But fine, okay, so don't say the Aramaic tefillos, but the point is you're not davening to the Malach. It happens to be, you know the system. The system is that the Malachim deliver the tefillos if you're not davening in a minyan. But that doesn't really change anything in terms, except for that particular halacha. Right? We don't daven to the Malach, you know, that's what we spoke about it either last time or two times ago. We don't like ask the Malach to put in a good word for us. We don't tell him to like, you know, Hatzlacha, doing your job, you know, bringing up the tefillos. Like, it's none of our business. You know, we can know it on a level of yediyah just because in terms of understanding Hashem's world, but it doesn't really change our avodah in any way. In those days, people used to just daven to the intermediary and they forgot all about God. That's the way, in other words, they felt no shaychus to the Rabbonu Shalom. They felt a shaychus to the sun. The sun is super powerful, makes me warm. It you know, it makes my crops grow. Of course the sun didn't create Shemayim Ba'aretz. That's a joke, right? But how do I relate to this incorporeal, you know, infinite God? I have the sun. The sun is a great creation of God. God obviously, you know, was having a really good day when he made the sun. And therefore, you know, I'll dive into the sun and the sun will relay my message to his master. You know, but I'm so many steps removed from God that I can't relate. That was the way the Rambam describes the progression. And when the kids saw the father davening to the son, so they forgot all about the God part, and they just davened to the son, and the whole religion of sun worship just, you know, evolved. Saying, but it wasn't because that people didn't believe in God. They just believed that there were other mahalchim that you could take, even though, you know, those are forbidden. But they didn't pay much attention to that. They felt intimidated, or they felt discommunicated with God. They just didn't have they had no shaykhus to their Rabbonu Shalom, so they felt like they could connect in a different way. Listen, I mean, lahavdil a little bit, that's what Christianity is to an extent. I mean, it was a way that, you know, God took a human form and he took one for the team. You know, God suffered for me. You know, God doesn't suffer for us. It's a strange thing. Like, nothing we can do will affect God in any way. We've spoken about this a couple of times. Like, that's very cold. You know, it's not something I can kiss. It's not something I can wrap my arms around at night, you know, or see the baby version of on his birthday. You know, I want to be able to see the baby version of my God on my birthday and say how cute he is. You know, and say like he's going to grow up to be a great man who's also one third of God. You know, like it's something that's meaningful to humanity to feel close to him. But like that's not the emes. So it doesn't matter how nice it makes you feel inside. It's just it's not a fact. So there's nothing you can do about it. But that was part of the problem. And the Yetzer Hara nowadays is not really to do that. It's just the Yetzer Hara nowadays is to instill doubts, is to instill questions, and to make a person think that maybe what we believe to be real is not exactly real, and to, you know, sort of cut us off from God in that way. Now, one ha'ara I just want to make is that the same way we don't understand the Yetzer Hara Avodah Zarah at all, I assume. I don't know. I don't understand it. Right? I mean, I'm trying to explain it to whatever extent, but like apparently the Yetzer Hara Avodah Zarah was pretty good at getting people to worship Avodah Zarah because they were all doing it. right? It's hard to imagine that I'm so much better than everyone else who lived at the time. The famous Maisa with Menashe that, you know what I'm talking about? Where he basically said, if you would have been alive during that time, you would have picked up your kapata, or whatever the Talmudic version of a kapata was, and you would have picked up your kapata and run to do the Avodah Zarah. Like, so I'm saying, like, we don't know what that is. But we know the Avodah Zarah for kfira, we know the Avodah Zarah for, you know, for complete denial. Actually, we know what the Yetzer Hara for that is. We know what the Yetzer Hara for doubts is. And to me, I think it helps us understand a little bit when we talk about people worshiping Avodah Zarah. So that helps us a lot in understanding. If we understand what our Yetzer Haras are, I think it helps us a lot understand like what everything's about. I mean, let's say, I don't know, when I was, you know, you have a friend who this so-and-so is an atheist, right? Like, oh yeah, he read all these books on philosophy, read all these books on, you know, why good things happen to bad people, why bad things happen to good people, and like whatever, can't blame the guy. He really looked into it, and that's just the conclusion that he came to. It just made so much sense to him. Like, I think we have to realize that the Yetzer Hara will dress itself up as rational. In the same way, I believe that the Yetzer Hara in the times of Avodah Zarah dressed that up as rational as well. Now, no matter what we try to do to you know make Avodah Zarah make sense, it just never comes out looking all that good. Does anyone disagree with that? Avodah Zarah just doesn't make any sense. At the end of the day, we're looking at it and we're just like, how stupid can you be? Right? You're bowing down to the sun, the moon, and the stars. You're bowing down to an idol. Like you hear Avram Avinu, like, oh, he smashed all his father's idols. And like then he said, well, you know, he told him the whole Maisa. And the father's like, oh, good point. Anyway, but what his father didn't say good point. He took him to Nimrod, right? He took him to be killed. Why? Was he that, you know, was he that dim-witted that he couldn't figure out that like his son had a good taina? Ridiculous. But the answer is, I think that's the same way we're going to feel, you know, by Yom Ahu, when Hashem's name is Echad, you know, we're going to finally understand that the same tainas against the Ribbono Shel Olam that we feel, the same tainas of atheism or the tainas of the lack of participation of the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives, we'll look back at that and say, like, how did anyone ever think that? Like, it's so irrational, it's so stupid. But like, so we can't feel that way because we have that Yetzer Hara. We have the Yetzer Hara for denying Hashem, or at least denying Hashkacha. So we can't really imagine what it's like to not have it make sense. But we have to remember at all times that that's a Yetzer Hara. That's not our own minds doing the thinking. It's not us. You know, that's not our real selves. Our real selves are the people who know and have real emunah, real bitachon in the existence of Hashem and Hashem's hashkacha in our lives, etc. Right? I don't know. Are you getting my point? I'm just trying to explain. I don't know. I don't know if this is my own idea or I heard it somewhere, but it's just something we have to know that, like, when we think we're thinking rationally, that doesn't always mean that we're thinking rationally. We might be thinking just as irrationally as someone who once bowed down to the sun. Right? It's just that our Yetzer Hara dresses it up as such that it makes perfect sense to us. That's the problem. Okay, anyway, that's the idea I think that the Chovas HaLevavos is going with. Rav Pinkus has a little bit of a different take on this Chovas HaLevavos, but I have to go to Marv, so maybe we'll hold off till next time.